Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Home First Finance Company India Limited Q4 and FY 2026 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need any assistance during this conference, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touchtone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sunil Anjana, Head Treasury and Investor Relations of Home First Finance Company India Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Farah. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Home First Finance Company's earnings conference call to discuss the financial results for the quarter and financial year ended March 31st, 2026. We hope you have had the chance to review our investor presentation and press release, both of which are available on our website and stock exchanges. As per our practice, we have also uploaded an Excel fact sheet containing historical data on our website for your easy reference. From the management, we have with us today Mr. Manoj Viswanathan, MD and CEO, Ms. Nutan Gaba Patwari, CFO. With that, I now invite Mr. Viswanathan to share his insights on overall performance and outlook. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sunil. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. FY 2026 has been a year of resilience and disciplined execution for Home First. We ended the year with healthy growth, record disbursements in quarter four, over 41.4% profit growth for the full year, improving asset quality, and a balance sheet that remains very well capitalized. What is important to us is not any one of these metrics in isolation, but the fact that all of them moved in the right direction together. We continued to grow well. Our assets under management stood at rupees 15,878 crores as of March 26, up 24.9% year-on-year and 6.4% sequentially. Disbursement in quarter four was the highest ever at 1,572 crores, up 23.5% year-on-year and 19.3% QoQ. For FY 2026, the disbursement stood at 5,424 crores, a growth of 12.9% over FY 2025. The strong exit run rate in quarter four gives us confidence as we enter FY 2027. Profitability remained robust. For FY 2026, PAT stood at 540 crores, up 41.4% year-on-year. Reported return on equity for FY 2026 was 15.7%, and on a pre-money basis, adjusted ROE stood at 16.8%. Even as we delivered this performance, we continue to invest for the next phase of growth. During the quarter, we added six new branches and five touchpoints, increasing the network to 171 branches and 373 touchpoints. During 2026, we also added 221 employees in largely customer-facing roles, taking our total headcount to 1,855. Our origination yield continues to be healthy at 13%, with an 83% share of individual housing loans. That consistency in mix is important because it reflects both the strength of our core franchise and the granularity of our portfolio. Now, coming to asset quality, one of our key priorities over the last few quarters has been to strengthen the portfolio quality from the front end by tightening our focus on early buckets, collection discipline, and resolution intensity. We are pleased with the pronounced improvement visible this quarter. Our 1+ DPD is at 4.7%, down 60 basis points sequentially. 30+ DPD improved to 3.2%, down by 50 basis points sequentially. Stage 2 reduced by 30 basis points to 1.4%. Gross Stage 3 improved to 1.8%, down by 20 basis points quarter-on-quarter. Early indicators from April demonstrate good collection outcomes compared to the same month in previous years. Fresh slippage percentage is lower than what was seen in April 2025, as well as April 2024. We have not yet observed any significant impact from the ongoing war in the Middle East. Let me now touch upon state-wise trends. To start with, all senior leadership positions in the branch network have been filled across all states and are now fully focused on delivering strong results in this financial year. Gujarat, MP, and Rajasthan are showing healthy growth and stable asset quality. Maharashtra has regained strong momentum, particularly in Mumbai and Pune, reflected in a robust AUM trajectory. All the southern states are on track for strong growth in this financial year, including Tamil Nadu and Karnataka. Also, the e-Khata issue is mostly behind us. In UP, the team is being built and we are preparing a strong base for FY 2028. Technology remains one of the key differentiators of Home First. It is central to how we source, underwrite, service, and scale the business. Home First's deep-rooted digital DNA, built consistently since inception, has created a strong foundation for accelerated AI adoption across the value chain. This digital-first approach has also given us clean, structured data assets stretching back to day one of the company, providing the high-quality training ground that modern AI systems demand. Our AI strategy is anchored on three outcomes: elevating customer experience, enhancing employee productivity, and driving structural cost efficiencies. In line with this framework, we have already operationalized proprietary AI agents for income assessment and contextual bank statement analysis. Parallelly, AI-led interventions in lead qualification, legal and technical valuation, and bureau analysis are currently in pilot and will progressively move to production as we scale our intelligent underwriting stack. On sustainability, our Green Homes initiative continue to make progress. We certified 140 additional homes during the quarter, taking the cumulative total to 450 as of March 2026. As we look ahead, we are entering FY27 from a position of strength. Growth momentum is healthy, asset quality is improving, margins remain robust. The balance sheet is strong, and the investments we are making in distribution, people and technology are intended to support durable growth, not just near-term growth. Based on where we are today, we are positioned to deliver around 25% year-on-year AUM growth. Our focus remains clear: grow with discipline, protect portfolio quality, improve productivity, and deepen our customer franchise and continue delivering strong and sustainable profitability. With that, I now hand it over to Nutan to take you through the financial performance in more detail. Over to you, Nutan.
Thank you, Manoj, and good afternoon, everyone. I will take you through the key financial highlights for the quarter and the full year. Let us start with the income statement. Total income for the quarter stood at 505 crores, up by 21.3% YOY and 4.4% quarter-on-quarter. Specifically, on the interest on term loans, went up from 406 crores in quarter 3 to 412 crores in quarter 4, presenting 1.6% quarter-on-quarter increase. As against average principal outstanding growth of 5.5% on a quarter-on-quarter basis, in the interest income on term loans, two lesser days in the quarter, that is quarter 4 versus quarter 3, impacted by 2.2%, 10 basis point PLR cut impacted by 80 basis points, and origination yields had an impact of another 80 basis points. So that wraps up the interest on term loans. Portfolio yields, excluding co-lending, stood at 13.2%, while disbursal yields for the quarter stood at 13%, reflecting continued pricing discipline and healthy customer acquisition quality. On the liability side, through proactive borrowing mix management, we were able to contract our cost of borrowing, excluding co-lending, by 10 basis points to 7.9%. Incremental borrowing cost during the quarter remained favorable at around 7.6%, which gives us confidence in the resilience of our spread profile. As a result, our spread excluding co-lending remained healthy at 5.3%. Yields have to be looked at a portfolio level, and we run a 100% floating asset book, allowing us the ability to reprice as cost of borrowing moves. This is an essential element of our financial strategy to not carry any interest rate risk on our balance sheet. Our aim remains to deliver spread at a portfolio level in our guided range of 5% to 5.25%. Net interest margin for quarter 4 stood at 5.9%. While there was a modest sequential compression of 10 basis points, NIM remains robust and continues to reflect the strength of our business model. For FY26, NIM stood around 5.7%. Moving to operating efficiency, it remains strong. Cost to income for quarter 4 was 32%, improving 10 basis points sequentially. For FY26, the cost to income stood at 32.5%, an improvement of 330 basis points. This is particularly encouraging because it comes alongside continued investments in distribution, headcount, and technology. As a reminder, the full year OPEX includes a one-time gratuity provision of 3.3 crores recorded earlier in quarter 3, arising from the implementation of the new labor code. Operating cost to assets was 2.7% for the quarter as well as for the full year. As we continue to invest for growth, we expect this ratio to remain broadly range-bound within 2.6 to 2.7%. Pre-provision operating profit in quarter 4 stood at 212 crores, up by 44.9% YOY. This reflects the operating leverage inherent in the franchise as the book continues to scale. Profit after tax for quarter 4 stood at 149 crores, up by 42.7% YOY and 6.6% QOQ. For FY26, profit after tax stood at 540 crores, representing 41.4% YOY growth. Return on assets of 3.9 and return on equity of 15.7%. Following the 1250 crore QIP completed earlier in April, our balance sheet remains very well capitalized. On a pre-money basis, adjusted ROE for FY26 stood at 16.8%. Moving on to provisions and asset quality, credit cost for quarter 4 and the year stood at 40 basis points. Provision on stage 3 assets was increased to 24% as of March 26 from 22% in December 25. We continue to follow a conservative provisioning approach and maintain overlays above ECL requirements. As of March 26, our total provision coverage ratio stood at 44.9%. We believe this reflects the prudence with which we manage the balance sheet while preserving adequate flexibility for growth. Now, coming to borrowings and liability profile, our funding profile continues to be well-diversified and cost-effective. As of March 26, 59% of funding came from private and public banks, 15% from NHB, 20% from assignment and co-lending, the balance from NCDs, ECBs, and NBFCs. During quarter 4, we executed direct assignment transaction of 264 crores. In co-lending, disbursement for FY26 doubled, rising from 153 crore in FY25 to 307 crores in FY26. The co-lending book grew to 593 crores and now represents 3.7% of AUM. In FY27, we will continue to scale the co-lending business by further strengthening the enabling infrastructure. This product line provides an opportunity to serve a wider customer base while driving enhanced productivity and returns. Finally, on capital adequacy and liquidity, as of March 26, our capital to risk-weighted asset ratio stood at 44.1% with Tier 1 at 43.8%. As of March 25, prior to April QIP, our capital adequacy stood at 32.8% with Tier 1 at 32.5%. Our net worth stood at 4,357 crores and book value per share is 418 rupees as of March 26. This positions us well to continue investing in growth while maintaining a disciplined risk framework. With that, we conclude our opening remarks and are now happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may enter star and one on the touchtone telephones. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may enter star and two. Participants are requested to please use only handsets while asking a question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. Am I audible?
Yes, Abhijit.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Manoj, so two questions. One is maybe near term, what we have seen over the last 1 year, and then maybe I'll move to the second question. But the first question is more around, if you look at this financial year which we just ended, the first part of the year was a little bit about weakness both in terms of demand as well as I would say asset quality. And then when we moved to the third quarter, we saw some semblance of stability coming in, and then fourth quarter obviously we have ended on a high note. Whether we look at the disbursement momentum, whether we look at the improvement in asset quality that we have reported. So just trying to understand the first half weakness which was there, that was more demand led, and are you seeing demand improve now as you have exited 4Q? That is the first part of the question. And the other thing is, you'll remember first half of this fiscal year, we also spoke about weakness in asset quality, predominantly part of it coming from some impact of US tariffs. How is credit trending now is something I wanted to understand. I remember you saying in your opening remark that April 26 was better than April 25 and 24. But just trying to understand how are these two things, demand and credit, trending right now.
Yes. Looking at the first half, discussion on the first half, so there were two or three things which were happening simultaneously. One was that we were just coming out of the whole overhang of the, you know, credit issue. There were delinquencies were elevated, and collection was a bit difficult. So also impacted by tariffs, etc. There was a bit of sluggishness in demand as well at that point of time. And we were also internally going through some issues, you know, some of the locations, regions were not staffed properly. There was some attrition and so on, right? So all of these things were happening simultaneously at that point, and hence the little bit of a weakness or sluggishness. As the year progressed, you know, some of the external factors got resolved, and then the internal factors also got resolved. We started filling up all the positions. You know, we rebuilt the teams, and simultaneously the external factors got resolved to some extent. So the credit weakness started coming down. You know, collections started improving. The tariff issue was also kind of put to rest at some point, and the demand also started from October onwards. The demand also started improving. So all these things kind of came together in the last two quarters, and then helped us deliver this good results.
Got it, Manoj. And then the last question that I had was a little bit, I would say, your medium term strategy. I remember you saying in your opening remark that we are entering FY27 from a position of strength. You also acknowledged that there were some internal challenges as well last year in terms of staffing, which you acknowledge has now been resolved. So if you could just articulate how should we look at maybe the next 2 to 3 years, you did mention that we'll be looking to grow our AUM at a 25% this year. So A, what all changes have you done this year which is giving us confidence that we'll be able to sustain that 25% growth? And then if you could also talk about how are you looking at your distribution, your expansion into newer states, or rather deepening into newer states? Just those 2-3 points if you can cover.
Yes. So one is, you know, the you know, teams being rebuilt, and you know, all senior leadership positions being filled across the country. I think that is a big positive with which we are entering this year. So we have now the teams on the ground, you know, fully focused on you know, delivering the results for the year. So we are not distracted with any positions to be filled or any attrition and so on and so forth. So that is a big, big, you know, positive starting point. Second is that, you know, we have further improved our value proposition to the, you know, distribution channels in terms of turnaround times, in terms of the, you know, wide bouquet of products that we are able to offer. So there, you know, the co-lending also comes into play, where we are, you know, so if we are going to a connector or to any distribution channel, we are able to offer them, you know, a larger bouquet of products where they can, you know, address more number of customers. It's a wider target market that they can address. So that is also that is being well recognized by the channels. You know, with you would see there's a big jump in the number of connectors as well last quarter. So that is another big positive that we are entering with. So all of this. You know, the other you can say important development is. Our, you know, huge success that we have got in places like Bombay and Pune, which were traditionally seen as, you know, formal markets and where only the banks could operate, etc. So we have really turned around and, you know, created a huge success there. So all of these things gives us the confidence that, you know, as for the next 2 to 3 years, we are on a very strong growth trajectory. We have understood, you know, the kind of value proposition the market wants. We are able to deliver that. And exceed the expectations of the channels, and so that's what gives us the confidence that, you know, this year definitely 25% AUM growth we can deliver, and, you know, if everything goes well, we should be able to kind of continue that trend over the next couple of years as well.
Got it. Thank you so much, Manoj. That's answered my questions, and I wish you and your team the very best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prashant Kothari from Pictet. Please go ahead. Mr. Kothari, your line is unmuted. Yes, please go ahead, sir.
Hello. Two quick questions from my end. The first one would be that, you know, you mentioned that you're on track for growth in the southern states in FY27. I just wanted to check, how did our market shares move in say, Karnataka and Tamil Nadu in FY26? And are there any specific competitors growing aggressively in these regions? That will be my first question. I'll come back to the second.
Sure. So market shares in Tamil Nadu, you know, Tamil Nadu was not very strong to start with. And, you know, it would have further dropped a little bit in this last year because, you know, the growth was very muted in Tamil Nadu. But we will hopefully be able to make it up in the coming couple of years because now the kind of base is ready and, you know, the teams are there. So we should be able to catch up as far as the TN is concerned. In Karnataka, it has been a fairly steady growth, except for a minor blip we had for one or two quarters because of the e-Khata issue. Otherwise, you know, it's been we would have sustained our market share in Karnataka.
Got it. And any specific competitors that you are sort of looking out for there or are growing aggressively in the southern states?
No new names as such. You know, the you know, set of existing players, you know, so depending on the season, depending on the year, there are you know, some players who are more active. So nothing significant to report in terms of new competition.
Got it. Maybe the next sort of question, how do we think about risk-adjusted yields when, say, compared to other pure play affordable housing finance players? Do we look at that? And then if so, what's our thinking there?
So on yields, our thinking is we are offering a wide bouquet of products. So starting from 5 lakh ticket size to a 40 lakh ticket size. And the idea, and we also do do loan against property. So the idea is to provide a blended yield, or rather, to deliver a spread of around 5 to 520. So if the borrowing cost drops, further from here, then, you know, there will be a corresponding decline in the yields. But overall, we are looking to maintain a spread of 5 to 520. That is what we are looking to do. So we will do that, you know, by using this whole blend of products. So there will be LAP on one side, maybe up to the extent of 20%. There is a smaller ticket loans which will deliver slightly higher yields. And then we have the, you know, larger ticket loans. And then anyway, co-lending is there, which is yield agnostic, because we are anyway getting an effective yield of about 5, effective spread of about 5.5 in the co-lending product. So the idea is to deliver, sustain the profits and deliver the respectable or the promised ROE that we have, committed to.
Helpful. I was thinking more around sort of risk-adjusted yield. So if we look at, say, the yield and take out the credit costs, how do we think about that on a portfolio basis, on different segments, say different states, and then how does it compare to our peers?
So it would be, in certain segments it would be similar to peers. It also depends upon the kind of markets, etc. we are comparing. So some of our peers operate in more rural or, you know, semi-rural markets, where the yields would probably be higher. Also in some cases, they operate in the, LAP, and, you know, they have a higher proportion of LAP and micro LAP segment, so where the yields are again higher.
Mm-hmm.
In comparable products, the yields will be largely comparable. It's not going to be very different. Just to give you a range, we operate in a yield range of between, say, 12% to about 14%. So ticket size is one axis, and the other is the nature of the product, which is whether it's LAP or housing loan. So 12 to 13.5, 14% is generally the range in which we operate. It doesn't vary beyond that.
Got it. And then just on that, on the LAP segment, say compared to the home loan segment, the LAP segment, are the, you know, yields higher and then the credit cost comparable, or let's say it'll be different?
The credit costs also don't fluctuate a lot. So, I mean, if we are talking about an overall credit cost of 40 basis points for the year, I mean, the range will be between, say, 20 basis points to 60 basis points. So we are not operating a product where, you know, the credit cost is substantially higher and where it's just delivering a higher yield, because that is not our strategy.
Got it. But for LAP also, it'll be in the same range, right?
LAP also will be in the same range, correct.
Got it. But yield will be higher. Is that correct?
Yeah, yield is higher. So again, we are not operating in the very high yielding LAP category. You know, our LAP yields are also in the, say, 14.5% range.
Got it. No, helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. A Our next question is from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equirus. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. My question is pertaining to PLR. So we had taken 10 basis point PLR cut last quarter. Now with rates likely to go up, systemic rates likely to go up, would we make any adjustment there, or would we continue with our pricing strategy that we have as on today?
Shripal, we will wait for the repo hike, if at all they were to happen in the later part of the year. We will also have to watch out how banks are repricing from the MCLR line, and only if we need, we will take the decision to hike. As I explained in my call, they were fully floating book. And our history also has indicated that we have the capability to increase rates as well as reduce rates. And so we will take a call based on as and when the hike comes through. In the next one quarter, we are not seeing that as a possibility. In fact, I would say we should be able to maintain our cost of borrowing in quarter one in and around the levels of last quarter.
Got it. Got it. My second question was on branch expansion. I was looking at the disbursement upon branch number, and it's already at close to 30 crore per branch. And this is clearly at a peak level. So incrementally, when you say you want to, like, we'll be growing at 25% loan growth. And so what is our branch expansion strategy? Where do you see the disbursement per branch as a run rate? And also wanted to understand which locations would we add branches, and what is the number of branches or percentage of branches with disbursement per branch below 10 crore.
So generally our strategy to put up a branch is only if the branch has the potential to reach this average branch branch disbursal potential, which is 2 to 3 crores a month. So we would typically not put a branch where the potential is only 1 crore a month. So that we would just operate as a touch point or a satellite location. So branch strategy is to add about 30 to 40 branches every year. That is what we are planning. And productivity of the branch, obviously the disbursal per branch, we should keep inching up, as we scale up. That has always been the, principle under which we are operating. So productivity of the branch and overall AUM, AUM per branch, disbursal per branch, and AUM per employee should keep on going up.
Okay. But so then where I'm coming from is that while we focus on business, our employee at branch level is responsible for collections as well. So in that case, the AUM per employee continues to inch up. In that case, are we planning to create a bandwidth for buckets like, let's say, 31 to 60 and 60 to 90 with additional bandwidth there?
No, so how we facilitate this increase in productivity is only through technology and tools which are made available to the employees. So the idea is to take away the time they are spending in mundane tasks and just focus their attention more on customer-facing activities. So originating leads, closing the transaction with the customer, and collecting from more difficult customers. These are the key front-facing or the customer-facing activities that we want to spend the time of the front-end teams on. So if they are spending time on any other activity like making receipts or, updating records, things like that, so those we continue to, keep observing and automating those activities.
But just two follow-ups here, which one was that in terms of AUM per branch, if you could highlight number of branches or percentage of branches with, let's say, AUM per branch having below 10 crore sort of a number, and also 10 to 50 crore sort of a number. And the second question was, where would we plan to add these 30 to 40 branches in coming year? Thank you.
So 30 to 40 branches would be broad-based. It is not, we are not really targeting a specific state as such. We are looking at, so it's a two-pronged strategy. There will be a few additions in new locations or new cities that we have identified across various states. And a lot of addition will also be in existing cities where we are increasing the density of the branches. So larger cities where we have a few branches, we would be increasing the number of branches in the larger cities to improve our distribution and access to the customer. So it's going to be a two-pronged strategy. Number of branches which are less than 10 crores would be very small. So it would be about, I don't know, about 10, maybe 10 odd branches which are less than 10 crore in a year.
Yeah.
Less than 50 crores you are talking about?
Yeah, yeah, sir.
Less than 50 crores will be about 50 branches.
Got it, got it. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for answering my questions. Good luck for the next quarter.
Thank you. Participants, at the request, please limit your questions to 2 questions per participant. Our next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking the question. So, not sure if co-lending fees got addressed. So, this quarter it was low. How much time would it take to rectify this and again scale it up? I understand that the regulatory and all the guideline changes has led to this. But is it addressed to a larger extent, and when should we again start seeing a pickup in this?
It should get addressed this quarter. So some progress has been made in the first month in April, and by end of May, hopefully all the issues should get addressed. So I think June should be a normal month.
Okay. So thereafter, the run rate of co-lending would be similar or maybe better than what we saw last year.
That's right.
Okay. And secondly, in terms of the bounce rates, we have heard from many of them that the bounce rates have been better in April than that of March. Okay. But I hear you that you mentioned at least it's better than that of April of previous years. But how has been it trending, and is it showing any sign of worry in any of the pockets because of the macroeconomic factors at this point in time?
No, as of now, there is absolutely no visible impact. I mean, there are sporadic, anecdotal, discussions going on. But really, nothing that we are seeing, at a central level in terms of a visible impact of this whole Middle East issue.
Okay, got it. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gaurav Khandelwal from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. My first question is on the sourcing rate. So that's is the 13% number average for the quarter, or is that the exit sourcing
average rate for the quarter?
And where are we at the quarter end, the exit rate?
It's similar, Gaurav. It doesn't vary month to month. So it probably will be 2 basis points plus, 2 basis points minus. That will be the range.
See, the the pricing is largely centrally driven in our case. So it's all algorithm based. So, the cases, the loan applications get logged in, and there is a rate, risk adjusted rate, which gets generated and communicated to the customer. And there is a little bit of a cushion for bargaining that is left. So it's a very, this is a process we are following since several years. So there will not be generally, month to month variation once we have fixed, once you have fixed a certain rate.
Got it. Thanks. That's very helpful. My second question, are you seeing more competition in your product segments, your ticket sizes by the larger housing finance companies of late? The competition always is high, but any new incremental there?
Nothing new as such to report, frankly. It's always up and down depending upon the month or season. But otherwise, there is nothing as such new or significant to report.
Got it. Okay. No, the place where I'm coming from is effectively all of these large HFCs are losing out to the big banks in terms of the prime loans. And hence, based on my discussions with some of these, they are trying to target some of the zip codes where you excel in, and hence the question.
But we are not, there's nothing significant that we have seen or, any new activity that we have seen as of now.
Got it. No worries. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jyoti Khatri from Ambit Wealth. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. One was with respect to ticket size of the loans. This quarter round, we are seeing higher growth coming in from the high ticket size loans, from 50 to 20 lakhs and 20 to 25 lakhs ticket size. So what's the outlook there? So assume that if this trend continues, will it exert some pressure on the margin side? Because I assume that even in the high ticket size loans, competition is relatively higher as to the margin pressure too. So what is the outlook there?
So, you know, as we have been saying since last couple of years, the, you know, there's a customer segment, the same customer, who used to purchase a smaller house or a, you know, lower ticket size property earlier, is migrating upwards. But his or her challenges continue to remain the same in terms of the difficulty in getting loans from the larger lenders. So we are not targeting a more premium customer as such. It's the same customer we are targeting. It's just that the requirements have gone up. The size of the houses, price of the houses have gone up. So which is why you're not seeing, if you look at, you know, there has been an increase in the ticket size, but you are not seeing such an impact on the yield. We are still reporting origination yields of 13%, and that is largely also because of the drop in borrowing cost. So, adjusted for borrowing cost, there is no decline in yields at all. So the reason is that we are addressing the same customer, and the customer is willing to pay that premium to us for us to solve his problem. So, you know, if 5 years down the line, we will be probably talking about a 40 lakh ticket size. But, you know, the customer segment is going to remain the same, the challenges are going to remain the same, and obviously then the yields will also be the same.
Okay. Fine. And second thing is on the fact that over the last 3 months, we have seen interest rates hardening. Do you foresee, you know, although your incremental cost of borrowing has come down, and your guidance sustains, you know, 5%-5.25% margins, do you feel that this might continue in FY 2027 as well, given the interest rates have hardened in Q4, fourth quarter?
So, let me take it in two parts. Quarter one, we have enough visibility to ensure that the cost of borrowing is in, by and large, in the same range. For the rest of the year, we will have to see how the actual pricing moves in the market, and based on that, we will have to reprice the customers or not reprice. That decision is not available today. We are very confident of maintaining the spread above 5%, which is in our guided range of 5% to 5.25%.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kushan Parikh from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. Just wanted to understand how you are seeing asset quality on the ground in the month of April, and I mean, what is your assessment for the year? And also what your guidance is on the credit cost side. Lastly, one specific question around the collections. I mean, peers have been highlighting some collection issues in the state of Karnataka. Just wanted to get your assessment of the same. Yeah, those are my questions.
So, asset quality wise, as I mentioned, you know, April experience has been good, and it's been better than last 2 years. So, gives us a lot of, I mean, it's a, you know, gives us a lot of confidence in terms of how it's going to pan out rest of the year. Because if you remember last year, April, you know, was much worse than, you know, March. But this year we have not seen that. I mean, it's been much better than last 2 years. You know, overall, you know, for the coming year, we feel that, I mean, if this is a kind of indicator, it should be good. The credit quality experience should be good for this year. Same for Karnataka. We are not here. We don't have any issues on, you know, as far as Karnataka is concerned. Generally, our portfolio quality has been extremely good there, and we are not seeing anything on the ground.
Thanks for that. Just a guidance on credit cost for the next year.
Credit cost is the same guidance, 30 to 40 basis points.
Got it. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Meghna Luthra from InCred Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, sir, for the opportunity.
I'm sorry, ma'am, your line is not audible. Could you repeat?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am, please go ahead.
Am I audible now?
Yes, ma'am, please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity for the question. I had one quick question about what has changed on the sourcing strategy from Pune and Mumbai specific that have been hired in the city. I plan to replicate in some of the other cities like Bombay, like Delhi,
So Bombay, Pune are more formal apartment markets where the sourcing largely comes from the developers who are building housing projects. So we have developed a good strategy to kind of tap into that market and get leads from there. We already had a good sourcing structure in places like Ahmedabad, Surat, etc., which are large developer-led markets. So we have managed to replicate that well in places like Bombay and Pune, which used to be more of a, the banks used to be much stronger in these markets. So we have been able to kind of penetrate that. So that is the main difference in the sourcing strategy.
Yeah, thank you. Can we have some more color on how this? Builder market has already been there in Bombay, and Bombay has been performing as a good market since I think many quarters and the recent quarters, right? So what is the shift that happened during the quarter? Is that the crack if you can give some more color on that?
No, not specifically with respect to the previous quarter. I mean, so the Bombay Pune, you can say transition has been taking place over the last almost 18 to 24 months. It's just that, it's become much larger now. So we started this transformation about 24 months ago and, entering these entering to the developer segment and sourcing customers from there. It's just that it has become much larger now and, really taking off, last quarter we had a good quarter, it is not that it started last quarter, this transformation started some time ago.
Do we get this in Bangalore, Delhi, Hyderabad?
Can you just repeat that?
Do we plan to replicate this in Bangalore, Delhi, Hyderabad? Are we going to see higher flows from the bigger cities?
Yes, to some extent. But if you look at, compare Bombay and Pune with, say, the other cities that you're talking about, those are more individual housing markets as far as affordable housing is concerned. But yes, some part of our Bombay strategy will be replicated in those markets.
Okay. And lastly, is it fair to assume that the co-lending and DA book is largely the large ticket, the high ticket AUM that we have?
Large part of it is yes. So co-lending is largely 20 lakhs plus. So 20 to 40 lakhs is where we do co-lending. So a large part of the higher ticket is co-lending.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Participants, please limit your questions to 2 questions per participant. The next question is from the line of Suraj Das from Sundaram Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yes, Suraj.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, ma'am. 2 questions. First, if I look at the number of employees per branch, it has steadily increased, let us say, from 9 in FY23 to almost 11 now. Do you believe further strengthening of the manpower will be required given probably the higher attrition in the sector and also the competitive intensity in the sector? This number can go up further. What is your opinion on that? So that is point one. Second question, ma'am, on this origination yield, I mean, looking beyond the quarterly movements, you had taken 35 basis point PLR increase in FY25. Still the yields remain broadly flat on FY25 versus FY24, if I look at your presentation, despite a higher LAP mix. Now, over the past few quarters, the origination yields are coming down, and then you have also taken a PLR cut. So, over the, let us say, next couple of years, do you think, yield could remain under pressure given the competitive intensity to sustain growth?
Okay, so on the first question, as far as the number of employees per branch are concerned, there will be some fluctuation. So, for example, if we add another, let's say, 30 branches next year, that number can, will maybe come down for a couple of quarters and then again pick up. But broadly, it will be in that 9 to 10, 11 for the 11 range. It's not going to substantially jump up. It will only gradually move up as the company scales up. So maybe 2 to 3 years down the line, that number can be a higher number. But otherwise, broadly, it will be range bound in that 9 to 10, 9 to 12 number. As far as the yields are concerned, so want to just draw your attention to the spread. So we have been able to maintain the spread. So if you see last 3-4 quarters, the 5.2, 5.3 that we have been talking about, we have been able to maintain the spread. So that is the number that we are trying to anchor to. So if the borrowing cost reduces, then we will pass on some of that to customers and, the yield reduces. But we are still able to maintain the spread. And our increase in, the LAP ratio is not very substantial. So we have always been in that 14-15% range. It's just maybe a 1% increase, which does not move the needle much. So broadly, we are operating in that 5% spread, 5 to 5.2% spread, kind of a construct. So depending upon whatever the borrowing cost is at that point of time, and we run a fully floating rate book. So we will, ensure that we maintain that 5 to 5.20 spread. So we either pass on the benefit to the customer, or if there is an increase, then we kind of, pass that increase to the customer.
Suraj, just one additional point. You referred to FY24 versus FY25. Now, what we had done essentially was we were looking forward to the cost of borrowing hike that was coming our way, and we had led with the price increase at that point of time, which led to a slightly higher spread. And even if we go back in that year, our guidance has always remained spread in 5 to 5.25. We enjoyed a higher spread for a shorter period, and in our conversations, we've always been guiding to this product mix that we're broadly now. And we will stick to our spread guidance for some time to come.
Okay, sure. Sure, ma'am. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arvind Ravi Chandran from Sundaram Alternatives. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Like, my question was on the similar lines of Suraj, but like, do we really see the need to cut PLR further, at least in the shorter term, if the borrowing rates are, especially the incremental borrowing rates are, broadly stable vis-a-vis the book?
Not at the moment. We've already done with the 10 basis in the first of January, so we will want to stay put for now.
And this PLR cut, is it effective for the entire book, or does it happen over some more time, some more quarters?
PLR cut has to get transmitted to the entire book.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Nischint Chawathe from Kotak Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. If I look at the AUM growth trajectory, we've come down from around 30% to around 25%. What gives us conviction and confidence that, you sustain this trajectory? What is it that... are we kind of, actively going to shift into segments, or is it the same segment that we pursue on the liability side tailwinds? What is it that gives you this conviction that this 25 will kind of, remain here and not further taper down?
So, one is that, you can say the organizational distribution strength that we have built, in terms of our connector network, our branches, distribution, RMs, etc. that we have across the country. Last year, for a couple of quarters, we were still in the process of rebuilding that. But now, you know, we have completed that process our delivery of the last two quarters gives us the confidence that, yes, this is, a good formula to kind of use or, you know, keep kind of building on. And that is what gives us the confidence that we should be able to, do this 25% growth. So as far as FY27 is concerned, our, exit momentum, our, let us say, continued dispersal in April, so that's what gives us the confidence to, project that number for FY27. And beyond that, hopefully whatever good work we do this year in terms of building a distribution and team, etc., should help us to keep going with the same momentum for the next couple of years.
Let me be a little more specific. See, if I look at your loan book growth, in the last 1 year and loan growth accretion, almost a third of the incremental loan growth comes in from ticket size above 25 lakhs. So, and I believe you do get, I think you rightly mentioned that, loans above 20 lakhs are sort of largely, kind of co-originated. So, is this kind of a strategy? How much is the funding cost differential between, your balance sheet borrowings and co-lending or basically, co-lending on co-lending and yield differential above 25 lakhs? And is this really the way forward, in terms of we slowly reducing the gap between us and maybe the target segment of larger housing finance companies?
So it is, co-lending is one way to bridge that gap, and we are using it more as a productivity enhancement tool. So, when our distribution, comes across a customer who's, let's say, a formal customer and who can get a loan from a bank, we, push it through the co-lending channel. In the normal course, we are sourcing customers who are from the informal segment, and, that gets booked as a normal, regular home first customer. So it's just a, way to kind of increase the target market, offer a better proposition to our channels, and increase the productivity of the team. So that is the strategy behind co-lending. Having said that, we are, at the moment it is only about 4% of our AUM and about maybe 10% of our, 10% of our origination. A good part of the 20 lakh plus is also coming as regular customers, which are, like I said, where there is a, increase in ticket size. So same customer segment who are from the informal segment but who want a larger ticket size, that also forms a part of the, 20 lakh plus cohort.
How much is the difference in cost of funding between co-lending and balance sheet borrowings?
Very similar, Nischint. I mean, it depends from bank to bank, but the range will be less than 20 basis points.
And how much is the catch-up between you and, let's say, the larger, larger housing finance, the AAA-rated housing finance companies in cost of funding?
Cost of funding will be 40 basis points, 40 at best 50, not more than that.
So just as these companies, have a strategy of kind of having a small affordable housing book, you can probably also have a strategy of, having a small prime book. I mean,
no, I don't. I think I want to, come in here and address, it's not prime. The customer segment is the same. There is inflation which is causing the ticket size to rise. There is lack of documentation in these borrower segments. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to deliver these yields. We are not targeting a prime book. I think it's very important to differentiate the segment.
The prime customer would seek a rate in today's market, he would seek a rate between 7.25 to 8. Right, he is not going to pay a penny above 8% today. So that is not the customer we are targeting. I mean, we cannot offer 8% even in co-lending. So what we are offering in co-lending is anywhere between 8 to 10%. So these are customers who are, like I said, customers who are slightly more, they have some formal source of income, etc. But who are willing to pay us that premium. So that is the co-lending portion. And then we also have in the same cohort, we have customers who are, affordable housing customers who have informal incomes, etc. and who are willing to pay us the rate, which is, you know, say 12.5% or 13%. Earlier the ticket size used to be lower. I mean, they would have bought a smaller house, but now they are going for a larger house. Their incomes have gone up, and hence they are looking to take a larger ticket housing loan. That's the only difference.
Just one last one. In markets like Mumbai and Delhi, the properties would be similar to that of the prime segment, but just that the customer segment would be different.
Absolutely right. So, you know, if you see Bombay and Pune as I was mentioning, you know, always a mainstay of large banks. So these are all projects which are all RERA approved projects. So most of the banks operate in these projects. So they would take away 90% of the customers who have formal incomes and, you know, documentation and so on. But there's always 10 customers who are left, who have informal incomes, who struggle to get loans from the banks. But they are purchasing properties in the same projects. And these are all from the deep suburbs, right? We are talking about Kalyan, Ambarnath, Badlapur, Palghar, these kind of places.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you very much for answering all the questions and all the best.
Thank you.
Participants, kindly limit your questions to 2 questions, please. The next question is from the line of Subhranshu Mishra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. So just wanted to understand this growth that we are forecasting. What proportion would come from home loans and what proportion would be from a LAP? And how do we think of the demand with the West Asia crisis? Is it going to have a dip in terms of the down payment capabilities? Any kind of uptick that we are seeing in demand, maybe because of the PMAY, or is it a very stringent PMAY this time around? Just wanted to pick your brains on these aspects. Thanks.
Yeah, so our mix is likely to remain the same. So we are looking at somewhere between 15% to 20% loan against property. We are somewhere in the middle of that, say 16% or 17%. So the ratio of housing to LAP will broadly remain in the same ballpark, which is about 80-20. So 80% housing and 20% loan against property. So that will be the mix. As far as West Asia crisis is concerned, at the moment we are not seeing any impact on the demand. So hopefully, it should be behind us soon and, you know, things will move ahead. So as of now, we are not seeing any drop in demand. April has also been fairly good.
Is it a more stringent policy than the previous one? Are we seeing any kind of throughput increase because of that?
Yeah, so it has a slightly more elaborate process, but I think some of the teething issues are getting addressed, and we should see a good traction this year in terms of transmitting the benefit to more number of customers. In terms of generating new demand, it probably does not have that kind of impact, but maybe it gradually will pick up. As more customers get the benefit of the scheme, it will kind of pull in more customers.
Got it. And just one last question in terms of data keeping. What is the differential between the home loan and the LAP product at blended level?
The yield difference.
Yield differential.
100 to 250 basis points.
And this would be same on an APR basis also?
Yes, because we are not, I mean, for us, you know, more or less the APR and the rate that we are charging, so reducing balance rate that we are charging, so the APR is almost same as the interest rate which is charged.
Because APR calculation also takes into account the fee income, so sometimes the fee income and LAP is slightly
very minimal, right? So those are very minimal, so that's why I said it doesn't move the needle that much. I mean, it would be a 10 basis points difference.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. These were my questions. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ravi Kumar Naredi from Naredi Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you to give me the opportunity. Sir, how much write-off bad debts from profit and loss account this year and how many units we auctioned?
27,000. So the total write-offs has been about this year has been about 36 crores.
Okay. So you think this amount is extraordinary high?
It's you know, the scale of the business is growing, so it's more or less in line with the growth in the business.
And how many units we auctioned?
Sir, we auction about anywhere between 50 to 100 units a month. So for the year, it will be around 1,000 units.
Okay. And sir, AUM growth we achieved between March 23 to March 26 is 30% CAGR. Same growth can we expect from next year?
So we have guided to a 25% growth, sir.
That I have listened. But it can be 30%, not possible in current circumstances.
At this point, difficult to say, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mayank Mistry from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Sir, just one question from, on the connectors point. I think there are many, players saying that the connector fees is increasing for them. And just wanted to know, have there been any higher demand from their side, even in your case? And if you can highlight how the connector fees has moved since last, few years, and maybe how it should trend going forward.
Yeah, so this is an ongoing, negotiation with the connectors. Any connector, whatever fee structure he's at, if you are going to ask him, he's going to always want a higher fee. So that is a constant negotiation with them. So how we normally address that is by also addressing other issues which the connectors have, which is, timely payouts, a wider bouquet of products, faster turnaround. So faster turnaround to some extent compensates for, higher fees. Because if they are able to turn around one more case or two more loans in a particular month, that more than compensates for the higher commission that they would be probably earning with somebody else. So that is how we kind of address the commission issue. And if there are, specific tactical, tactical moves that we need to make in a particular market, we do that. So in a particular location, particular connector, we need to increase the fees, we do that. But on a on an overall basis, I would say probably you would have seen a maybe a 10 basis points movement in the 10 to 15 basis points movement in the commission.
Okay, sir. So basically it varies across the connectors and across the geographies.
Yes, varies across connectors and geographies, and we also plan it depending upon the connectors throughput, the quality of files, and various other metrics that we track the connectors on.
Okay, sir. Thank you. That was my only question.
Thank you. Participants, if you have any questions at this time, you may enter star followed by one on your handsets. We have a question from the line of Aditya Pal from MSA Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Yes, Aditya.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Great set of results and really commendable performance on the asset quality. Just wanted to quickly understand what is the issue with Tamil Nadu and Telangana. Is it just human capital issue or is it something else that you are seeing on the ground?
No, as we had mentioned, it is, I think, largely to do with internal teams and building the team. But now those things are behind us and we should have a good year as far as Tamil Nadu and Telangana are concerned.
Understood. And the other question is on strategy. So in your opening remark, you had said that you have successfully implemented agentic AI and some piece of work has been already automated. So how are we thinking, will it increase our productivity in terms of growth, or will it increase our productivity in terms of OPEX cost?
So as of now, the prediction, I mean, we can more confidently predict the outcomes on the cost side. It is a little more difficult to predict, you know, what kind of outcomes it will have on the origination side. But eventually, it should have outcome, it should have origination outcomes as well. So on cost side, definitely yes, there will be a strong outcome because of implementation of AI, because of higher productivity. As far as new originations, etc., are concerned, there are some pilots going on. It could be a more gradual impact over there. I mean, the outcome that we are looking for there is, the ability for us to capture loans which may be otherwise getting declined on the ground, proactively. So that is something that is going on. If it is successful, of course, it should help us to improve originations. But that is something that it's difficult to predict at this point.
Understood. So that's all from my side. Wishing you and the entire team all the very best. Thank you.
Thank you, Aditya.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants with questions at this time, you may enter star and one. As there are no further questions from the participants, I now hand the conference over to Mr. Manoj Viswanathan for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you everyone for joining us today and for your continued interest in Home First. We hope we were able to address your questions satisfactorily. For any further queries, please feel free to reach out to Sunil Anjana or write to us on investor.relations@homefirstindia.com. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Home First Finance Company India Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.